Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
This is NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. You know, it's great when professional athletes return home to give back to their communities. But retired soccer player Tony Sane has taken that to a whole new level since starting a foundation back in 2003. It started with the St. Paul native organizing and offering free summer sports camps for children across Minnesota, and then expanding to an after-school program with free meals and tutoring for kids at the Conway Recreation Center on the east side of St. Paul. Tony Sane also began reaching out to children in Haiti, taking trips there with a team of volunteers to donate soccer equipment, train coaches, and then lead soccer camps there. That work eventually expanded to Tony bringing Haitian children to Minnesota to compete in soccer tournaments here and stay with host families over the summer. In 2010, his work captured the attention of the U.S. Department of State. The agency tapped Tony to be an official sports envoy and travel the world to promote soccer as a community-building tool among youth. And now, Tony Sane is turning his attention to the shortage of teachers of color in Minnesota. He believes he can help. Tony is joining me in the studio this morning. So nice to see you.
Thank you. I'm honored and just lucky to be here.
Yeah, so clearly retiring from professional soccer was really just the beginning of your story.
It was the beginning of the end, or the break in between the chapters.
So how would you compare your life today, running your foundation here in Minnesota, and working with kids and young adult mentors, to your time as a professional athlete? How would you compare the two?
Different. Both of them, when you get in bed at night, you think about all the wonderful things that happened that day. And how inspiring it is, and how you smile and how you make millions of people smile. And both of them, you wake up in the morning knowing that if you don't work harder than everybody else, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it pushes you.
I made the observation when you walked in. I'm like, you seem very happy, very at peace with yourself. You have sort of a different swagger.
Well, I surround myself with a lot of positive people. I'm lucky. I've always been blessed from a young age. People have gravitated to some kind of energy supporting me and like-minded causes. So I also, at a young age, found out that if you can make people in the room happy, you're going to be happier. So you make me happy. That's why I'm smiling.
But I was also attributing you walking slower. I know you've got some knee injuries. Yeah. You've sort of slowed down just by aging, right?
Sort of by a lot, yes.
All right. Well, for those of us who follow your career, it is amazing to see the explosive growth of your foundation. So I want to go back to 2003 when you decided to start the foundation. And at that time, you were still playing soccer professionally, right?
Yeah, I was still playing in Europe. And two things happened. A young girl asked to help run a program. So I kind of funded it. And it was only $500. And she did a 10-week program in the Midway area and volunteered in so kids could play soccer. And then another friend of mine said that she would draw paperwork because she could see how happy it made me and that I needed something to focus on when I retired. So we started the organization in 2003, but it was really a pass-through vehicle that helped me donate equipment and do some appearances and while I was playing. But it wasn't until 2010 that I really started to focus on it and do it full time.
And that's when you moved back to Minnesota and set up an office in St. Paul, right? So you were actually here and able to really work on the foundation.
Yeah. And when we were really grassroots, so when we say move back to Minnesota, I had two friends move in with me, and our budget was $30,000 for the three of us. And I was remodeling my townhouse. So the three of us lived in two rooms for 7 months, and that's where we ran the foundation out of.
So I spent some time looking at your website, and it states that the foundation has now grown from one program with a budget of about $60,000 to now six programs and a yearly budget of $3.5 million. So how have you been able to garner support from school districts around the state, as well as the business community and professional sports teams support you, like the Vikings, the Twins, and Minnesota United? Why have so many people stepped in to assist you with funding and just, you know, volunteers and help?
Well, you know, I think the misconception is they're funding us. They're not funding us so much as we're developing partnerships. Mm-hmm. So we are collaborative in what we do. We identify a problem or a challenge, and we look for a partner to solve it together. And so often the time, the money runs through our organization, but it's really finding good partners to tackle challenges in the community together. So we've grown it with the support of this community together.
So with the summer camps, and they're, I should mention, they're not just soccer camps. These are all kinds of sports, right? Name the different sports that kids can participate in.
Well, we're using the banner freeprocamps.com this year. But we'll do eight football camps, 16 basketball camps with the Fast Break Foundation. We'll do over 64 soccer camps. We'll do Learn to Skate with the Wild, and we partner with the Herb Brooks Foundation, and they head those up. And we'll do eight baseball camps with the Minnesota Twins, as well as Sandlot baseball across several parks in the Twin Cities.
So the partnerships you mentioned, so the places that these camps take place, I know when I've interviewed you in the past, I've gone out and visited you at rec centers, right? What are the facilities that you use to hold the camps?
We partner with school districts and public parks so that we do it together. So in St. Paul, Park and Rec helps underwrite some of the costs, mm-hmm. as well as Minneapolis. And we really work with them about finding the most needy parks, the ones that need programming, and the one that have the appetite for the particular sport we're delivering.
And you're not just in the Twin Cities now. You're in, what, in Rochester? You're in
where? We've expanded our educational program. So we have our Dreamline program in St. Paul, Minneapolis, Rochester, and St. Cloud.
Wow. Why are you so passionate about investing in Minnesota's youth?
You know, I think it goes back to that understanding, and I see a lot of people don't see the dots, but if you can make the community better and happier, you're going to have a happier life. And so that's how I was raised. I really feel like I was raised by the community, and a lot of people stepped up and supported my mom, who was a social worker for 42 years and was giving back at the same time. And so I'm just following her footsteps.
So if you're just joining us, we're talking to Tony Sane, who is a St. Paul native, a retired professional soccer player, whose foundation, the Sane Foundation, has done great work for years now across Minnesota and continues to grow and expand. And is it time to sign up now for those soccer camps and the sports camps around the state? Is it the sign-up time right now?
It is. I think by the end of the week, we will have all the sports up. I think we started to have some of the basketball and some of the soccer ones up. But I know by the end of the week, the new website will be complete with sign-up sheets and registration. So you would go to freeprocamps.com, and it would redirect you to our website.
The number to call if you want to ask Tony a question or share a story if you've attended one of his fundraising events, the number is 651-227-6000, or you can leave me a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, MPR. So I know lots of new changes, new developments in your life in just the last week or so. But one of the things that is happening right now with your foundation is that you're trying to expand your Dreamline program, and you're working to try to get more talented young people who are good with kids to become teachers. And I know this, I guess it started with your relationship with college students who were working with you or volunteering with you over the summer to coach these sports camps. Tell me about the Dreamline program.
Well, the Dreamline program really started off through a young man that I mentored. And he graduated college, and he had a finance degree. And he was working in New York City. And he called me. He said, "Tony, you know, I'm following your footsteps. Thanks for helping me get where I got." He goes, "And I'm actually giving back." I said, "I'm really proud of you." His name was Aaron Club. And he said, "Well, I take one day a week and I volunteer at a local school and I do soccer service and leadership." And I said, "Well, that's great. How can I help?" And he said, "Well, it's the best day of my week. So I quit my job so I could volunteer 5 days." And I was like, "Go get rich and donate." And he reminded me he was 23 years old. And this was the only time in his life where he would be able to give back and do something. And so I supported him financially with leadership, and we worked on curriculum together. And the feedback was so powerful that I said, "That's what I want to do. I want that program to be involved and embedded in schools." So initially, we hired all soccer coaches, soccer college graduates to do the work. And now it's evolved to multiple sports. But the onus is really on building relationships in the school buildings.
So what do these the young people who are interacting with the kids, what are they doing with them?
So we're called coaches, and we try to put 3 coaches and mentors in every school. We focus on 9th graders or junior high, and it's a very data-driven program. So we would get the data from their 8th grade year, and then we would, if you failed some of your core courses, you would be on this focus list, and we want to support you. But we also support the whole classroom. So part of the day, we are in the classroom with the teachers supporting our students, and some of them are more challenging or need more attention. So as the teacher is teaching, we can give special attention to a group of 3 to 5 that may have more questions or may need more individual support. Throughout the day, we also have a support room in every school, which students can come to us for individualized one-on-one or group support, mentoring and tutoring. And then after school, if you want to stay after school, we offer the same mentoring and support and then an enrichment activities. And the data we have has told us that if we spend at least 8 hours a year with you, we're going to get the best academic increases.
So you're seeing results. Your staff shared a fact sheet with me, and it shows the percentage of students who are showing grade improvement. So across the state, we're seeing, you know, schools where kids are just doing better academically.
Yeah, I think kids are doing better academically. The one that really jumps out to you, in new schools that we go to, we've seen an average of 50% improvement in behavioral, in suspensions and referrals and things like that. And that's because I think, you know, the schools want to change culture, but they have more adults in the building, leads to more relationship buildings, less mental health issues. And so that one is really strong as well.
So what are the young people, the coaches, what do they say to you? What are they getting out of it?
Oh, man. So the coaches are incredible, and I am more distant from the program than I would like to be. But when I go for their professional development, it really inspires me. But they love their jobs. And when I ask them, like, what do you need? It's selfless. They're like, we could use more school supplies. We could use vans for, you know, to take the kids on college recruiting trips. They love their job. They really do. And it's a service job. And the hardest thing is letting them know that, you know, we want to develop you as a person, as a coach. So this isn't a career for you. We want to develop you. And that's why we're now pushing them into the teaching profession.
And so what do you make of the shortage of teachers of color across Minnesota? And I did a show about this back in December. It was shortly after the Star Tribune did an analysis of data from the Minnesota Department of Education. And those records show that about 34% of K through 12 students are kids of color in Minnesota. But when you look at the teachers in those classrooms, they're almost always white. Only 5% of teachers are people of color. And that number isn't showing any sign of budging. And we know that the student population is becoming more and more diverse every year.
Well, you know, I don't think that you have to be a person of color to teach people of color. But, you know, I had a conversation this morning, but you can't walk into a building and not see anybody that looks like you. And if they are, it can't be the custodian and the behavioral specialist. So that just isn't resonating, you know, positivity. I think we need the teaching profession by itself is a dying breed. You know, we should want our most talented people to become teachers. I mean, the biggest asset we have in the world is our children. I mean, they're going to take care of us. They're going to take care of the world. So why aren't we putting our smartest, brightest people to nurture that? So one, we have to realign our priorities as a nation. And then two, you know, we have to uplift the profession, right? I mean, these people work with our kids. Like, we should, mm-hmm. they all should be on pedestals. They should be paid more. They should be respected. It should be something that everyone wants to do because they're shaping the community. So that's first and foremost. And then secondly, you know, as our demographics are changing so quickly, you know, we need to see people in leadership positions and mentors that look like us, that understand us. And so you're not going to be a successful teacher just because you're someone of color. But you will have a higher probability to relate to the students. You probably went through things that they went through. And the students will see everybody in the school. So I would never want a school of all, you know, one demographic of people. Mm-hmm. It needs to be reflective of our community.
And I read that 71% of the coaches that you are working with, they are people of color, and they do reflect the diversity of the schools that they are going into. What do you think? What is happening with kids? Why do you think so many of them are struggling in school? I mean, I know you at the Conway Rec Center, you're there every day. Your offices are located there, and you get to interact with the kids. What are you hearing from families and the children themselves?
Relationships. I mean, we wanted to build, you know, when I started, I wanted to build the organization on relationships. It wasn't about soccer, it was relationships. We're lacking positive relationships in the homes, in the communities. And I always say, we're not short on talent in this country. We are short on support and relationships. And somewhere along the line, you know, with some inequities, you know, caused of lack of support for some demographics. And we don't have healthy relationships in every community. And so we need to figure out how to ensure that every child has a positive relationship. And they can be had at, you know, at the park, you know, at a school. My mom, you know, single mom, worked all the time as a social worker to make sure that we had enough. And my dad wasn't around. But I had a lot of relationships because I could go to the park and rec, and everybody there treated me like their family. I went to schools. I played on sports teams. So, you know, I was raised by the community. And at some point, you know, something went left instead of right. And we need to get back to treating everybody like family and developing true relationships in the community.
We talked about partnerships and also about funding. And I know that you've received funding from the state legislature over the last 3 years to support your Dreamline program. But now you're asking for something more consistent. You're asking the state to do more to support a program that you feel is working.
Yeah, I think it's working. One, you know, just the number of males we've been able to recruit. Typically, there's not a lot of male support people in school. They're behavioral. So we've been able to recruit a lot of males and let them know that they can be great supportive roles. Two, we have 100% retention in our teacher pathway program. And three, we're getting healthy results in the schools. We're providing support, we're getting better grades, we're getting better behavioral outcomes, and we're getting more people interested in the teaching profession. So I look at it as four wins.
And so 100% retention, what does that mean in your teacher pathway program? So they all end up, you know, getting their licensing and getting their degrees and becoming teachers?
Well, we're in our first cohort right now. We're about 10 months into it, and nobody's dropped out since they've entered a school building. And that's important because I think a lot of times people will think they want to become a teacher, and now they come into school or they do their student teaching, and there's low retention rate for especially the younger generation, because you can go to school, you know, all you want, and then next thing you know, you get dropped into an urban setting, and you are like, I didn't sign up for this. Mm-hmm. Our staff are signing up for this. They're signing up to build relationships. So by the time they get through the academic rigors of a master's degree with a university, and we're partnering with St. Mary's University right now, they already know how to develop relationships. So they hit the ground running.
And so there is a bill to appropriate base funding to the Sané Foundation that you're hoping will get passed.
Yeah, and it's not just ours. You know, there's a larger, you know, bill with the Teachers of Color Act, and we have one that's helped us expand to other areas. And you know, we believe that if we get base funding, we can plan. We're asking young people to invest their lifetime to become a teacher. So we at least want to be able to make sure that we can invest in them over the next 2 years while they get that teaching degree. But you've seen a great focus, and we're just trying to align with the state. The state legislature and the local community has recognized this, and so we're trying to, you know, give them what we want. And ultimately, like I said, we're not asking to get tons of money. We're looking to partner to build systems to solve challenges.
And I read just this week another new development for you. You are going back to college yourself to finish your degree. It was announced this week, the new Bush Fellows, the Bush Foundation Fellowships. And you're one of the 40 people out of hundreds of people who applied who was named a Bush Fellow. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So what does it mean for you? What happens when you become a Bush Fellow?
Slight clarification. There's only 24 of us.
24. Okay. I was being more optimistic. Okay. Okay. But okay, 24 yes, out of 600 yes, and something. Yes. Okay. Congratulations. Yeah.
No, I'm so excited. I've applied before and I haven't gotten it. And actually, my mom was a Bush Fellow and she really kind of pushed me. It helped her do a lot of the great work that she's done over her career. And it's going to let me finish some unfinished business. And that's, you know, finish my undergrad in urban education and community-based organizations, but it's also going to give me time just to focus on this. And it's really, I'm going to use it to investigate. And, you know, I flew out to California last week with St. Thomas University, exploring different residency programs, pathway programs, and really, you know, focus my energy on how I can better support, you know, teacher pathway programs and school embedded support systems.
So it's a $100,000 grant intended to help people who are doing good things expand their good things. So you went away to college at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee,
yes,
right? And then you left to play soccer professionally. And so why is it important for you to finish that college degree?
Well, it's important because this is what I'm telling young people, and I don't want to see young people say, well, you made it without this. And, you know, not everybody has to go to college. I think there's other trade schools as well. But the facts are 71% of Americans don't think that everyone needs to go to college, but 71% of Americans think that their kids do. So if it's not good enough for my own kids, it shouldn't be good enough for others. But I want to finish because it's something I started, and I love to learn. And I know that studying, you know, urban education is going to help me develop skills so that a system that I'm building to support the educational system, I need to learn the tools. And to have more time in a strictly academic setting will allow me to do so.
And I'm sorry, what college are you going to go to?
As of right now, the plan is Wisconsin-Milwaukee, but I am exploring different local colleges to transfer credits or in programming now that I've actually received it, if there's anything that could be done locally.
So you're going to be doing homework at the Conway Rec Center with the kids. Well, we see you doing some homework.
You know, I was planning to take some time off of work to kind of do some of this, but that might be interesting. I you know what?
You probably could, right?
I could. I don't want to use a two birds analogy, but I will be able to do two things at once is hang out with kids and get my homework done.
And you might need some tutoring.
You might need some
business or education classes. You might need some tutoring. And also you said you're going to spend some time researching other programs, trying to replicate what's working well in other cities. So that's how you'll use.
Yeah. Obviously a lot of research and a lot of learning. And a lot of collaborations.
And I should mention the Bush Fellowship, the Bush Fellows. My husband works for the Bush Foundation. He's a vice president there. And so I've learned a lot over the last few years just about the great work that Bush Fellows do and just what they've been able to contribute back to Minnesota. So congratulations to you. I want to ask you about Tony as a kid. we talked about you growing up in St. Paul, but you also spent some time in West Africa. Your dad is a native of Gambia, and you spent a few years living there as a boy and playing soccer, yes?
Yes. You know, I was born here, but my family at a very early age wanted to make sure that I understood where I came from and my history. So they asked me to go and live with my cousins. And I think the early plan was to stay a month. And back then you could just take a plane ticket to the airport and cash it in. And there were no phones. short story is I ended up staying for 2.5 years.
Oh, wow. And you remember that time well, because you spent a lot of time, you said, you know, getting to know your cousins and the other kids in the community.
I did. And, you know, I think that's where I really learned about community impact. I mean, it didn't matter, like, what block you were on. Like, every adult was your parent. Mm-hmm. And every adult made sure that they took care of you. But they also made you accountable. And one of the things that we work on in schools is we're taking care of them, but we're making them accountable. And I learned a lot, you know, but at an early age, I think being away from my mom for so long, you also become very resilient and you learn to appreciate who's ever there. So I've moved a lot in my career, but you learn to make friends fast and enjoy what you have.
Did you finesse some soccer skills?
You know, at first I was just in the house and they said, you know, go outside and otherwise you're not going to meet anybody. So they kind of just threw me out in the street and that's the only thing people did. So it was either like sit against the fence by myself or play with kids and played soccer. So I am lucky that they threw me out in the street.
Got in the game. Now, you went on to play soccer in high school at St. Paul Academy. What were you like as a teenager?
Skinny.
Really?
No, I was really thin and short. I grew 2.5 inches every year from eighth grade on. So I think that helped me develop a lot of skills because I never really relied on my athletic talents when I was young until I was like a junior in high school.
Huh.
So I developed the skills. I would say I was a happy kid. My mom, you know, always tells me and my family that she did not realize that she had such an incredible family, happy kids because we were so poor. But I would say I was a happy kid.
And so you said you kept growing. How tall are you now?
6'3".
Wow. Okay. And what do you love about soccer, playing it? I mean, what do you remember when you were young and even as you started playing professionally? What was it about the sport that made you excited and happy?
I love the creativity piece. I love that there's so much going on.
It looks exhausting to me. I played a little bit, like in gym. I was like, whoa.
you do have to run. It is a requirement to play soccer. You have to run unless you want to be a goalie. I just like the difference in your roles. So just understanding what your role is and then trying to do that to help the team. And there's such a creative piece of it. There's not one way to do anything. And that's, I think, is how I try to live life.
We do have a listener who would like to say hi to you. This is Suleiman from Minneapolis. Go ahead.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, good morning. You have
this is Suleiman Jai. Tony, we know each other. I'm the guy who your dad stayed with when he visited.
Oh.
Hello, Suleiman. Yeah. How are you today?
Yes, fine. Thank you, sir. How are you? Congratulations. We are very, very proud. This is the side of the Gambia now. We are very proud of you.
Thank you. I would also mention after the World Cup, one of the announcers mentioned that Tony Sana, whose father was for the Gambia, and so the whole nation embraced the USA team because they had a Gambian playing in the World Cup.
Ah, the support. And I thank you for that. Thank you for that. Thank you. But do you get a lot when you meet people in the community? I mean, I've been to some of your fundraisers and people do like to praise you and just say thank you for doing the work that you do.
You know, people are appreciative and, you know, we might not be mainstream, but a lot more people, you know you more than you think. There was a new soccer player from Minnesota United, Lawrence from Kenya. And, you know, I took him out to dinner just to kind of introduce him to the town. And there was a policeman that kind of pulled up and said, "Hey, Tony, how's everything going?" And, you know, he must have thought I was like Michael Jordan or something. It was really random. But, yeah, people here do appreciate the work you do. And, you know, they contribute in different ways, some with their time, some with their talent.
But it's nice to know that people see you and appreciate your work. So, and your fundraiser, I should mention, it's grown so much in the number of attendees that you had to change the venue a few years ago, right?
Yes. And I have to thank you, one, for helping us in some early years. And you were a stellar. And we have different MCs
for
3 years.
My favorite year is when you let me MC with one of the kids.
That was probably one of the best experiences. And that actually really made us make sure that the kids were most interactive. And we brought her back on stage this
mm-hmm.
year. So we try to make the fundraiser different and interactive and collaborative. And it's fun. And we make it a celebration of the work we do.
And yeah, and you, yes, you make sure a lot of the children that come to the after school programs and their parents are there, and they get, you had dancers, like the young girls who dance on stage.
Yes. They stole the show. They might have a lifetime spot.
Another listener, this is Galen from Minneapolis. Go ahead, Galen.
Hello.
Hi, you have a question?
Yeah, my question is, schools are very segregated in the Twin Cities. How can we change this?
When you say in the Twin Cities, I think like the demographics in the school districts are changing very fast. I know when I was in elementary school, I was the only person of color in my class. And now we have well over 50% of the kids in St. Paul and Minneapolis. I think as a community, we want to make sure that the community embraces integration and inclusion, and people are free and feel comfortable living in every neighborhood, so that the schools that you go to reflect the neighborhoods, and but so the neighborhoods reflect the community as a greater whole.
And Galen, are you still there? Yeah. Do you work in a school?
Yeah, I am a substitute teacher. I'm a retired teacher. There's some schools that are 80% white, even though the demographics in Minneapolis does not reflect that. And there's others that are just Hispanic or just African-American, or 80% are Somali. So it's not reflected in our neighborhoods, or, you know, I think it's a big problem.
I mean, I would agree that, you know, sometimes on some tax boundaries, parents select in some ways. And I think it's something that I'm glad you're addressing it. And I think we all have to be honest with ourselves. In this state, you know, we claim inclusion, and yet we see things like this happen sometimes. There's a lot of factors, and some that I don't have the power or the full knowledge to comment on. But I think it is good that we recognize it and make it a priority to make sure that our schools do look like our community, so that our kids don't go into any homogeneous setting.
Let's talk about your time playing soccer and having a chance to travel all over the world. The last team that you played with, the LA Galaxy, that was back in 2009. And I know you get this question a lot. You played with David Beckham. Did you all actually have a friendship? Did you get to know him well?
Yeah, I mean, we weren't best friends, and I came in just for the year, so you know, he had been there for 3 years, and I was one of the older guys on the team. But you know, he's a good guy, and you know, definitely brought his family in to be a part of the team, and works really hard. And you know, I think that's one of the things people don't really understand is, you know, he's good at free kicks, and he's a good looking guy, and he's a magnet on TV. But what makes him a great soccer player without having good skill is that he's one of the hardest working guys on the team all the time.
And it was shortly after that time in 2010 that you went with a group of other soccer players. You went to Haiti after a very devastating earthquake there. And I know that was a very significant time in your life because of what you saw and witnessed and an effort to help there. Can you talk about that some?
Yeah, I mean, the earthquake was devastating, and it kind of, you know, fueled my retirement. I probably should have retired earlier because I was already 39 years old when I was playing. But we went to do disaster relief, and it was supposed to be players with the Galaxy. And by the time they opened up the airports, we were already in preseason, so there was no players available. And I was still injured, so I went, and that kind of kickstarted my retirement to say, you know what, there's a reason why you're hurt and you went here. And you saw so much. And since then, we've stayed there and supporting the people of Haiti. We've gotten State Department grants. We've gotten different partnerships. And we've gotten Haitian companies to invest in Haiti. And we do try to do a yearly exchange. So we'll bring a team from Haiti to the USA Cup every summer.
And is that the tournament played in Blaine?
In Blaine. It's one of the largest youth tournaments in the world.
It's always hot. That's when the kids are always suffering from heat exhaustion the week that they're here. So tell me more. What did you see? Obviously, there was devastation. People lost their homes. There was a lot of suffering.
It was. I mean, when I go back now, it's amazing how much it's built up. But you would drive down the street, downtown area, and all you saw was a 10-foot pile of rubble for like miles and miles. Literally every house had fallen. And there was smoldering and there was smoke and it smelled. And, you know, kids would not go in any building that was still standing because everyone was afraid. So we did soccer practice and clinics from 8 in the morning till 5 p.m. And then we did distribution of household goods like water and feminine products and soap and flour every night. It was really sad. It really made me appreciate, you know, what I have. And even for people in countries in extreme poverty, this was very traumatic. They lost a lot of people, and everybody lost somebody that they knew that day in Haiti.
When did you make the decision to go back? Because now you've been back and forth many times.
Well, I came back thinking, you know, how could I do this affordably to get you to come to America and just give you a break from this trauma? And so USA Cup basically let us play for free. Local people house the kids for free. So it was a true experience. The LA
here in Minnesota.
Here in Minnesota. Okay. The LA Galaxy helped fund the plane tickets, which were discounted on a group rate. And it was such a good experience that I decided I needed to go back and visit them and see how they were. And then I started to go back once or twice a year. And then it dawned on me that, you know, the infrastructure was what they really needed. So I decided to hire them to start a system that I could support, and that's how the Haitian Initiative was born. And now we have 320 kids in a program. You know, almost half of them are girls, and we feed them every day. They go to school 5 days a week, and we've set up a small computer lab and English lessons. And, you know, what somebody earns in Haiti is shockingly less than here. I mean, we have a 200-person waiting list for jobs that range between $150 and $200 a month for a full-time employment.
And you started taking volunteers back with you to Haiti. And you also did some training, right? You made sure they had to have the coaches that they needed. You did training.
Yeah, so before we started our program, the way we started was we did coaching education. Mm-hmm. So we trained like hundreds of coaches, and now we actually go back and we do that. And we partner with Minnesota Youth Soccer Association, with Coach Across Continents, with FIFA. So we actually train coaches there on youth development and positive training. We've also trained police officers there with the embassy on relationship-based leadership. And then through the State Department grant, we took high school kids from here to Haiti. And so now a couple of times a year, we have what we call an impact trip, mm-hmm. where we go and learn about the country of Haiti, give back, support the children in our program. But also we call it like a philanthropic vacation.
So it's during spring break, right? There's a bunch of Minnesota kids. Or yeah. In years past, it's been during spring
break. Yeah, we've always done it during spring break, but really any group can do it at any time. It's just planning. And we've had, you know, college students go as a group, and they stay out a little later. And we've had, you know, high school students go as a group and or just, you know, adults that want to get away and, you know, spend their money giving back.
I think in a previous interview I did with you, you talked about girls in Haiti and how they don't have the same opportunities, access to education and sports as they do here. So what was it like having, or you were very deliberate in reaching out and recruiting girls and making sure girls have access to these programs?
Yeah, and we started bringing girls teams over here too. But initially there was all boys in the program. And I'm like, well, where are the girls? And I said, well, the girls don't want to play. And I'm like, really? And then they said, well, the girls need shoes. So we bought 300 pairs of shoes. And then they said, well, now they want to use those shoes for school. And then so we bought the girls another pair of shoes. And then they said, well, the girls have to, like, do the chores at home, so they can't come. And so we said, okay, we're going to close the program. When we have 10 days of girls participating, we need 80 girls in the program for 10 days in a row. And when that happens, we will open the program back up to the boys.
So you saw what was happening.
Right. So it took 14 days. And they're like, oh, we have 80 girls for 10 days. And we said, okay, the program's back on. And now it's amazing. The girls take ownership. You know, one of the best stories is there's like an under 10 girls team, and they have so little money, and they pool their money. They literally pool like a penny a week. And the under 10 girls team buy cherry juice because it's going to give them nutrients. So they eat it with their meal every day, and they have cherry juice. And they're like this little team, and they're so small, but they're determined to be the strongest, best team.
I wanted to ask you about working with the U.S. State Department as an official sports envoy. And I was trying to read more about this. And this basically involves you and other professional athletes. You go to certain
nations. And you talk about or look at how soccer can be a community building tool. What does that mean? What do you do when you make these trips, or what is that about?
Well, it's youth development, and it's going into places and, one, teaching, one, just coaching, providing partnerships. You know, it's a lot of it's diplomacy. I've recently joined the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition, you know, Minnesota Advisory, and we work to basically promote diplomacy all over the world because it solves so many problems. In other countries, we don't tell them what to do, but we want to show them what our democracy allows us, and especially under Secretary Clinton, provide opportunities for women and girls to have access in a lot of countries where maybe they wouldn't. And the story goes, I was in Pakistan this summer, and the girls, they were so smart, and they said, well, this has been great, but it doesn't really matter because next week the boys aren't going to let us play. Mm. And we're like, really? And then they said, yeah, ask them. So we asked the boys that were in the room. And the boy said, yeah, they can't play because it's uncomfortable. And they said, well, Nike makes some stuff. So if we made stuff that they were all covered, would it be okay if they played? And the boy's like, yeah, but they wouldn't want to wear that. And the girl said, yeah, we would. And I said, so they can play? And they said, well, no, they still can't because they can't walk to practice because girls can't walk alone. And I said, well, what about if the coach comes and picks them up on a bus? And so we pick them up at their house so they never have to be alone. And they said, well, that would be okay, but we don't have facilities here that they can play in because they should be in their own facilities. They shouldn't be mixed with men. And I'm like, so you have to find facilities for them. How are you going to do that? And then they said, okay, yeah, this is a good thing. So they talked to their coaches. They're like, you guys need to go find facilities so the girls can play because they're doing all these things. So we let them figure out the problem. But in the end, they wanted the girls to be happy. They just had to follow the norms in that community. Mm-hmm. And they have access. And, you know, like you said, we're not short on talent in this country. We just, in this world, we just need to support it.
So what other countries have you been able to visit as a sports envoy for the State Department?
Bolivia, Malaysia, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Cyprus, Haiti, Ethiopia. I know I'm going to Kenya later this month. Abu Dhabi, offhand, you know, I might be forgetting one or two, but,
And what is Tony learning? I mean, you're definitely teaching these communities what's possible. What are you learning as you see?
Well, in my current job, you know, I'm wearing a suit and tie most days. So it's really special when I take these trips is that I actually get to do direct service a lot. Mm-hmm. And that keeps me smiling. And I learn about other cultures in other countries. I learn about different games and different recruitment strategies. And, you know, I think we can learn so much from everybody. So it really gives me a chance to outside the box thinking because they have a completely set of different set of challenges than we do. Right. In some countries, like volunteerism is just not a norm.
It's not a thing.
Mm-hmm. In some countries, like, why would you go watch your children play? Like, we don't watch our kids play Cars or Barbie or play kitchen, right? Like, have you ever thought about calling all the neighbors? Hey, the kids are playing G.I. Joe in the background. Everybody come over and let's watch them. You know, in other countries, they think that about youth sports. Like, why would we watch kids play? So it's just, you know, changing your mentality a little bit.
When the Super Bowl was here last year, the Conway Rec Center was awarded one of those Legacy Fund grants, I think $50,000 to help remodel that facility. The Conway Rec Center is where your offices are. It's where you run a lot of your after-school activities. How does it look different now? Is the work complete? What did they do? What were you able to do to that facility?
We're about $7.5 million into a $13 million capital campaign. But the Super Bowl supported us. The Vikings and U.S. Bank supported us. We've had a number of supporters have come in. Securian was a St. Paul organization that supported us. We remodeled the gym. We put Fast Break Foundation logos everywhere so the kids have a tie to an NBA team. And we redesigned the kitchen. And we served 38,000 meals out of there. So that is like the showpiece. We hope that in the spring we can finish building the soccer fields and the football fields outside with a dome so that the community has all year access. And then we're building another small building for more community meeting space. So we're about halfway there. But even, you know, parents came and they cried and they said, nobody ever does this for us. And I'm like, what do you mean? You have a lot of stuff. He goes, everyone comes and does stuff for themselves. He goes, you guys just came in and built this up so we would have better condition. And that's special. And that was really touching.
I remember years ago when I interviewed you, and you walked me through the Conway Rec Center, and you were pointing things out. You're like, yeah, that would be great if we could fix this, and that needs to be bigger. And if I had this, you know, I could do more. And it's starting to happen. I mean, has it really hit you, just the magnitude of all these little things that you've been able to do and how, you know, it's just blossomed into something bigger with each step?
You know, I always say, like, I never planned on any of this. And did you plan to be a soccer player? I read my seventh grade journal. Out of 100 pages, 97 of them had to do with soccer. So somehow it was there. You know, it wasn't until we won the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Award, which was a global award given to one professional athlete globally that had a foundation that was, you know, over 3 million in size for making communities healthier, that I realized, like, that there was buy-in and it is happening. And where the future goes, you know, we're not putting limits on what we can do because we don't put limits on the supporting our own people. So there should be unlimited love for the community. And it's happening. And that's the piece that's so much like playing soccer. Like, you go home and after you won the championship game and you're just like, you're in another kind of world thinking about how awesome that was. And, you know, during the World Cup, 1 billion people watched me and they were so happy. But then the next morning you wake up and, like, if you don't work harder than everybody else, you're not going to play. So I like my job.
What is the impact? What are you already seeing having now a professional soccer team here in Minnesota? I mean, the construction of that Allianz Field, I mean, we can see it right off of 94. What do you make of that? That now we have yet another team and another place that people can be exposed to soccer. I'm looking to going to my first game. I've never seen a live soccer game.
I think you're going to have a fabulous experience. You know, the soccer stadiums is unique. So that environment, it's an outdoor environment. That'll be about 20,000. It'll be sold out. New state-of-the-art stadium. But I think you also see it on TV. Like, soccer is not coming anymore. It's here. Like, families wake up on Saturday and Sunday morning to watch the Premier League. You know, if you look at TV ads and spends, it is here. And with some other challenges that some other sports are having around some health concerns, you know, soccer it's global. And you see even, like, you know, the Minnesota Vikings are, you know, part owners of the Nashville team. So it's here. The local team has done a great job, Minnesota United. They've done a great job of brand awareness and recognition. And, you know, we're trying to work with them to do more in the community as I am with every sports team. But to see the way that they've galvanized the community to get behind the team, to get their own branding, and really what they stand for has been incredible.
And what is your relationship with Minnesota United? Are they supporting your foundation? Are you, it sounds like you said you reached out to some of their new players.
Yeah, so we have a good relationship. I think it started back when, you know, Nick Rogers was the president, and we started to look for ways we could, you know, develop the relationship, and a lot was going on. And now Chris Wright's moved over from the Timberwolves, which we've had a longstanding relationship with him as well. So they co-chair the gala, which is one of our bigger events. And, you know, they have a Bell Bank Player of the Game. So we get $1,000 every time certain players are Player of the Game. And most recently, Miguel Ibarra became our first ambassador. So here's a kid that's been on the team when they were in the lower league and has beaten every odd to get there. And he really is just a great person. And he's not from here, but he says he wants to stay here the rest of his life. So for him to come and say, how do I get involved and be an ambassador on a personal level has been great, but he's such a fan favorite and you know, he's actually good. So we like it that one of their best players believes and supports what we do. And again, we have a responsibility then to highlight and promote him, because the truth is kids would rather go to Miguel Ibarra soccer camp than Tony Sani soccer camp, right? So hopefully he becomes our pitch man of the future.
And so in our final minute of the show, any advice? A lot of parents who may be listening and they've got kids who play soccer. Any advice to the parents on how they can be supportive of their children's interest in soccer or just any sport?
I would say just let them play in a place where it's access. You know, our summer camps are great for that. Again, free pro camps, you know. Like I said, you get food every day from Matter. You know, Delta Dental gives you a toothbrush and an oral hygiene kit at every single one. It really is a place to come if you want to introduce your kids to sports, where the first thing they're going to learn is making new friends and having fun and respecting other people. And that should be the priority no matter where they play. So that's my advice for parents.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tony, for sharing your story, sharing your time, and continuing to inspire so many people. Tony Sana from the Sana Foundation. Thanks again.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis MPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.